Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, all. Let me take my intro off as I have my guest on the line. Hello, Congressman.
How you doing?
Hey, Congressman Devin Nunes. Thank you very much for coming on once again. This is your second time on my show. I was actually trying to contact you earlier to thank you for coming on. There's a lot I want to talk about. Number one, congratulations on your uncontested win in California. I know there's not much that the liberals and the far left can do against you. You know what you're talking about. You stand up there. You defend what you believe in. And the people of California, thankfully, respect you and understand that you're there to fight for them.
Well, so, at least in my area of California. The rest of California did not go so well.
The rest of it didn't, but there are... there's a shining light in every dark corner, I would say sometimes. It doesn't always make sense, counterintuitive, but California does harbor a lot of great Republicans, Republican Congressman Tom McClintock, Darrell Issa, who I think is going to just absolutely whitewash D.C. and the Capitol, and a lot of people are excited about that. And, yourself and a bunch of others, I don't want to get into a naming fest right now. I can rattle off the names. But the election as a whole was very positive in the House. A lot of great conservative Republicans were elected finally. Let's talk about that first. Let's talk about the election, your take on it, and moving forward, what you think the Republicans need to do.
Well, sure. Well, congratulations in New York, where it looks like we may pick up 7 House seats, including the old the Staten Island seat there. It looks like we're going to pick that seat back up.
That's me right there.
Yeah, is that your district where you live?
That is my district. I did work with Congressman Grimm just to gain campaign experience, and he's a great candidate, and you're going to love working with him.
Yeah, I met him several times and actually supported him pretty heavily, and I was actually in New York a couple weeks before the election and met with him, so he's going to be a good guy, I think a good addition to the team, and as you know, that's kind of the last bastion of Republicans anywhere close to New York City, so that was an important victory for us. But, this is a historic election. You know this, and your listeners know this is the most Republicans we've ever had in like 3 generations in the House of Representatives. It was all but basically for the West Coast. Everywhere else was pretty good for us. We did okay in New England. Throughout the South, it was just totally annihilation. Essentially what happened is these districts that voted for McCain voted for Bush but kept sending these guys that called themselves the Blue Dogs. The gig's up on those guys, and the people realized that if you vote for Pelosi, San Francisco liberalism, you're not a Blue Dog, you're not conservative, and they were all thrown out of office. And I think what you saw is you saw a correction in this country back to where the country really is, and I've said for a long time that the country is a center-right country. It's not center-left, it's not even center, and it's definitely not left-wing, which is where Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and Barack Obama have been governing, is basically extreme left. And essentially what happened is we gained back a lot of seats that we should have never lost. A lot of folks that have been represented in Congress for a long time hiding under the Blue Dog label lost. And it looks like we're going to end up with, 244 seats.
And I think even bigger than that is the election, the case for local elections, and how state legislatures, including New York, we had a pretty decent turnout, not governor and lieutenant governor wise and attorney general, but for state senators and things like that, the people that decide and put out the legislation, put out the state budgets and things like that. And we're in the era of redistricting now with the census data coming in and things like that. New York is probably going to lose a few seats. Mm-hmm. Which, if you're a Republican, is positive news because most likely those would have been blue seats, including Luis Lauder's seat, who was made famous or infamous by the Slaughter rule, the Demon Pass rule.
Mm-hmm.
But this is big for the, like I said, the redistricting, and you actually have a piece on a solution that you proposed for the case for of gerrymandering. Tell us more about that. Tell us what redistricting is, why it happens, how it happens, and what the dangers are and what's going to happen this time around.
Sure, and in my book, Restoring the Republic, I talk about how this gerrymandering has actually been around a long time, but it causes big problems throughout the country because, especially in big states, where you have multiple members of Congress, and you know, people, I think, you know, generally know what gerrymandering is, but essentially you end up with most seats that are untouchable because they jam the districts so packed full of either Republicans or Democrats that that essentially they don't really stand for, they stand for election technically, but the reality of it is you know, some of these districts that for example in California we call it the ribbon of shame. It stretches from Monterey, which is Northern California, all the way down almost to L.A. County to Ventura County, just short of Los Angeles. And so it's 300 miles long by 5 miles wide, and at one point it actually disappears during high tide. And so those are the types of districts that really the representative there doesn't even, you know, has no accountability to anyone because it's five different media markets. Several different newspapers. If you were to hold a town hall in one part of the district, no one would even know in 90% of the district that you even exist. And people get frustrated with government because they don't even know who their representatives are. And so what I call for in my book is just for some simple rules and guidelines that the Congress could set down to the states that you must follow. And when you're drawing these districts, and essentially all I'm really asking for is to keep counties and cities as whole as possible. So, you know, you have to, by law, you have to have the equal number of people in the districts, but you don't have to have districts that are, you know, sliced and diced and stuff just based for partisan reasons. And I think that's an important solution that I've outlined. I actually have legislation. We're not going to pass it for the next round of redistricting in 2012, but it could be something that we could look at now, and maybe by 2022 it could be something that could be implemented.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point you just touched on. Not being able to pass legislation right now, that includes repeal of health care and other big-time legislative agenda for Republicans. The House is going to be doing a lot of different things and putting pressure and putting Obama on the spot. Obama, in turn, is going to push through a lot of executive orders, which is very dangerous. We saw the effect of JFK's union executive order. I forgot the number. I think it's 1110, something like that, which gave unions immense power until to this day, despite Reagan's best efforts and so on. But executive order is very powerful. It could be rescinded or taken away, removed by the subsequent president if the subsequent president is of a different party. Now, what does the House plan to do right now? What are the big-ticket items outside of trying to repeal health care, or if they even are going to try to repeal health care, and what's after that? What's likely to get passed? What's likely to get taken down in the Senate?
The first thing is people have to realize that this is really three-dimensional chess. And I don't say that to try to be political and try to not answer your question. It really becomes who's going to move first. So in the House of Representatives, we can repeal Obamacare. We can probably get a lot of Democrats who will vote with us, so it will be a bipartisan vote. However, the next move would be up to the Senate. What does the Senate do? How are they able to bring votes? How are the Republicans able to bring votes to the floor and force people to take a position on Obamacare? We'll slowly be able to figure this out, and President Obama then will, you know, I think there actually will be, you know, times where in the Senate, there will be senators who I think will vote to repeal Obamacare. And that's one thing that people don't realize. If we end up with let's just say we have 240 votes in the House, there could be 10, 15, 20, maybe even more Democrats that vote to repeal Obamacare, close to where you could actually get to the two-thirds number. In the United States Senate, we could end up with all the senators that are up for re-election next time, I think there's a chance that you would get Ben Nelson, the new guy from West Virginia, the Manchin. So there's a few guys who I think would love to actually get their vote up on the board against Obamacare. So I'm not one of these that necessarily says we can't get it done. I think we're going to have a very fun time trying, and it will also let us make the case as to why is Obamacare bad? Why is it that big government-run health care won't work for this country? Why is it that Medicare and Medicaid are both broken government-run programs? So it will give Republicans an ability to get out there, and hopefully we will have a message about, you know, what it takes to, like the title of my book, Restore the Republic. Well, I know Republicans have to get back to supporting a Republican form of government in the truest sense.
Yeah, you just alluded to something that's very important that people need to realize is when the healthcare debate was going on, the more Obama talked about it, despite what they say it's a communication issue, it wasn't a communication issue. People just didn't want it. Or you could make the case that it was a communication issue, meaning that the people communicated to the White House that they didn't want it and the White House just didn't listen. So it could be a twofold thing. But the more people talked about it and the more that comes out about it, and when, you know, it initially passed in Caterpillar, Verizon, AT&T, all these companies came out and said, hey, listen, we just ran the numbers, and which is a little bit too late. They ran the numbers and they said, hey, we're not going to be able to afford this. And then all these waivers started coming out. People got angry at that. Cohen and Rasmussen, the favor of repeal of Obamacare went up to as much as, I think in the last couple months, it was at 58%. And Rasmussen's pretty much spot on most of the time. So it's going to be interesting to see how people react to healthcare being a central debate once again. And this time, you guys are going to be able to define the narrative. I think it's going to be very interesting to see, as you said, fun. If you're a political junkie, or if you're a pundit, or anything like that, or if you're in the House and you're fighting for your constituents, it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, it'll be fun in the sense just to watch what they're going to do, because it'll be put up or shut up time for guys like Manchin, who have been on both sides of Obamacare. So
and
he
has 2 years.
Yeah, so I would assume he'll probably vote to repeal. Look, we are really in uncharted waters. No one can predict what's going to happen. I would have never in a million years thought that Nancy Pelosi would stay on as Democratic leader if she lost control of the House. But I think it shows you how left-wing they really are. And it also something that I write about in my book that I didn't really know I was describing Nancy Pelosi directly. But I talk about how there's not a lot of difference between communism, socialism, fascism, totalitarianism. That essentially what that is people use that to gain control over other people. They use it for power. And obviously by Nancy Pelosi and the current leadership basically just hanging on, it shows you that they really don't care about any of these policies. They're only in it for the lust and greed of power. Very dangerous ideology, and really it shows you that the Democratic Party is essentially dead on ideas. It's all about just controlling people.
Mm-hmm. And that John Dingell actually said that, and said it very publicly in a TV interview. He said, we have to pass health care to control the people. And that was a real kind of Joe the Plumber situation that Obama had. He came out and said it. And then Donald Berwick's, love of the NHS, the healthcare system in Britain, where people are dying and not getting the care they need, and people in America are living so much longer and better when they're diagnosed with something.
And people are going to realize quickly, and this is what, and you were kind of alluding to it, but essentially what's happened is people are just realizing that healthcare costs are continuing to skyrocket. Doctors won't see Medicaid patients. Fewer and fewer doctors are seeing Medicare patients. And people are getting dropped, companies are dropping their healthcare plans. And so the longer this goes forward, the worse off the healthcare system is going to get, which, by the way, I don't think we're totally out of the woods. I do believe that Nancy Pelosi and her allies knew that by the bill that they passed that it wouldn't be perfect, it wouldn't be the government takeover of healthcare. But what they're betting on is that they can destroy the system so that people get frustrated and say, just give me government healthcare, just take care of me, please. And I believe that's what their plan is, that's what their goal is, and that's going to be the fight of the century right now.
Well, it's very refreshing to hear a sitting congressman say that, a politician saying that, because it's blunt and it's very honest, because that's what people have been saying, locally. Everybody I talk to, people that attend Tea Party events, people that just colleagues, people that I know through, LinkedIn groups and things like that, everyone's saying the same thing. They're sabotaging it, or they appear to sabotage what's going on, because this was supposed to control healthcare costs, which price control is always a bad thing one way or the other. We were supposed to control it, and all of a sudden AARP comes out and they're saying they're going to have to drop people, or they're not drop people, but their rates are going up. And AARP was one of the ones that are saying, don't worry, seniors, your health care and your insurance is going to be fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
so
and, you know, right now, I don't know if you've seen it, but you have Andy Griffith on the you know, on the TV, which why can't I think of his real name now? But, you know, basically he's an actor that's promoting government tax dollars, promoting the new health care bill. Very dangerous stuff where you have the government getting actors to try to get out there and fool the American people, especially the elderly people, that this health care bill is good. I mean, it's tax dollars, our tax dollars being used to promote Obamacare. Very dangerous, hasn't really been talked about much. What's Andy Griffith's real name?
That,
the actor.
I think that is his real name, Andy.
That is real? Okay, yeah.
I'm actually on his Wikipedia page right now, but I was very disappointed in him when I saw that, and President Bush actually gave him a Presidential Medal of Freedom back in 2005, so I wonder if Bush passes some legislation if Andy Griffith would defend him, so I'm very curious on what his political leanings are. But I still want to ask you a couple more questions if you have about 5 more minutes for us.
Sure, yeah, I got a couple more minutes, sure.
Perfect. What do the Republicans in the House, let's just not worry about the Senate right now because that's a whole different animal. Let's think about the House. What are the 3 things that they want to do right now outside of trying to repeal Obamacare and the Bush tax cuts, which according to multiple sources, Obama looks like he's caving on, which it would be political suicide for him and other Democrats if they let the tax rates go back to where they were prior to the Bush tax cuts. So it's really tax rates that are being held where they are right now. It's not a tax rebate for people. That's a common misconception.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other 3 big ticket items that that the House Republicans are going to try to pass through?
I think it's important to remember that every member of Congress has his or her own opinions, and so you know, one of the things that. You know, that I think that we have to be very careful of is that we're going to have over 80 new members of Congress. And so a third of our caucus will be new members. And I think that John Boehner and the leadership and they're being smart about it right now, is that they're not trying to go out and plan an agenda until, you know, we get the full scope of the conference. What is it that people got elected to do? I mean, obviously Obamacare is kind of a no-brainer. You know, from my perspective, we have to tackle the entitlement somehow, which is kind of related to Obamacare. We have to look at, you know, how are we going to make cuts in spending, serious cuts. That's got to be done. And then we needed a real energy policy. And I outline, you know, I have a very good bill. It's talked about in my book. It's called an Energy Roadmap. You can go to my website and check it out. But energy is a top issue also. But we all have, you know, different issues. We all get elected by our constituents, and we have to get in there, and we have to work together as a team, because one thing that is good is that we have, you know, we'll have 240 Republicans, but we have to hold together as a team and make sure that we're all, you know, fighting for what's right in terms of for limited government. I think if we keep limited government at the forefront on everything we do, I think we'll be successful in 2012, because with Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Obama, I mean, it just appears like they're just like trying to destroy the Democratic Party from within. So that's about as good a best. I know it's kind of convoluted answer there, but it's about as good as I can give you right now.
Well, there's a lot of things going on, and it is very early to find out what the actual agenda is going to be on aggregate. So, you know, as you said, piece by piece, everybody has their own thing that they want to do, whether it's with the military, energy, et cetera, they all got to please their constituents, which hopefully they're not just pandering to now, but they're actually serving. So that'll be very interesting to see. The last thing I want to ask you once again, I'm with Congressman Devin Nunes from California, Republican, conservative, which is very refreshing from that state. But last thing that I want to talk to you about is the Deficit Commission released their plan or their own version of a roadmap or suggestions that they feel would be the best in tackling the deficit issue. I fervently disagree with a lot of things that they propose there. But tell us what you, your feelings on it are. Do you think that some of these options are going to be picked up by the House or Senate or either House or Congress and the President?
Well, I don't want to give you a flippant answer here, and I don't want this to be taken as that I don't think that the folks that were on the commission did their job, Bowles and Simpson, or that they're bad people. So don't take this wrong. But I rejected the commission outright from the beginning. It has no credibility at all from my perspective because those folks are not elected. And President Obama ran for office. He shouldn't have to put together a commission to know what he wants to do to balance the budget and where tax rates need to go and how to reduce the deficit. I mean, he ran on that. I mean, he criticized Bush. I mean, you know, the rhetoric was just outrageous during the campaign. And now they've taken what were bad deficits during the Bush administration of $300-400 billion and blown it up to $1.5 trillion. And so the commission was a gimmick from the beginning. It's just Obama playing politics and the Democrats playing politics. So I just, it's a little flippant, but I don't care what they had to say because they're not elected. And we as legislators ought to know what we want to do, which is why I wrote a book about it. And I always challenge people to, you know, if you're elected as a legislator, then bring your ideas to the table. If not, go get another job.
Well, I agree with that. If you were elected and you were elected by the people, it's not a European system. We're not run by the bureaucracies, nor should we be, by some far out power that just delegates whoever they want to any kind
of. But they'd like us.
They
but they'd like us to be.
Right, but we're not yet, and with your help and with the new House Republicans, we won't be, and that's what we're all hoping for. We hope this election is changed in the right direction. We all wanted some sort of change. Obviously, we didn't get what we wanted, and a lot of people, such as myself, warned about the cult of personality, but people didn't want to buy it, and now we have, as you mentioned before, a sort of correction, and hopefully this is a sign that the Republicans figured out what they lost over the last 10 years.
Well, it's going to be, we have lame duck, and then we start fresh in January. So it's, like I said, uncharted waters. But thanks a lot for having me on tonight.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for coming on and giving us a little extra time, Congressman Devin Nunes from California. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.